Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What is up, everybody? It's Wednesday night, and John Sheeran and myself are here to talk some Cincinnati Bengals with you on the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. And we're also going to be talking a little bit of Baltimore Ravens this evening with a special guest. Justin from the awesome YouTube channel Engraven Vids is he joined us. It is a previously recorded interview, but we're gonna pop it on here, and it's a really good one. A lot of good stuff coming from him, hearing about the progress of the Ravens, where they were last year, and all of that. A lot of good stuff there, and then of course we'll get to some headlines. We have a behind the scenes Bengal, so we've got a lot to get to tonight. John, what's going on, my man? How are you?
Doing pretty good, man. Doing pretty good. A lot of things going on in the NFL right now. And, you know, OTAs are cranking away. I think they're kind of coming to a close around the league, but been pretty quiet, I think, along the shores of the Ohio River in Cincinnati. So there's something to be grateful in that regard, I guess.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I guess it kind of has been that way recently. But, you know, there have been times wherein the Bengals have been, they've been in the headlines for the right reasons, the wrong reasons, all kinds of stuff over the years. Covering this team, following this team, but it's nice to kind of not be talking about some negative stuff, some injury stuff or anything really about that. So, yeah, well, it's good to be here. Good to be chatting with you, John, and thanks to all the live listeners here. If you are new here, you can get the Cincy Jungle podcast channel and our show, which is part of it, on your favorite audio streamer, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all of the major ones. We are there. Do us a favor as well, leave a review of the show if you could. That helps us out. And of course, if you like the video style, if that's more your thing, you're always welcome to join us live. We do Wednesday evenings, John and myself. We do either Monday or Tuesday. We kind of do a run through of the headlines, and then a couple times a month on Fridays we do listener questions. We're a little overdue on that, so we probably should be doing that again somewhat soon, but so we'll be doing that, and you know, all kinds of different stuff we'll be bringing you. But the video you can get by subscribing to our YouTube channel beneath that Cincy Jungle icon there on John's side of the screen if you're watching, and then of course by giving a like to the Cincy Jungle Facebook page, you can see the video streaming there and our Twitter account. So we're covering the bases. We're in a lot of different areas for this show, and hopefully you enjoy what we're doing. So let's kind of get in for a little bit, kind of go over some. I went through some headlines yesterday, but there are a couple of others that have emerged since. One has been kind of older and in the rear view, and maybe a couple days old, I shouldn't say older. And one is actually something that was posted today on Cincy Jungle and has kind of made the rounds a little bit through networks. Let's start with the failed waiver claim, John, and that is with John Kaminsky, an edge defender who was previously with Atlanta, and he was a hot name out there. I guess like seven teams put their waiver claims for him, and of course where the Bengals were in the pecking order, they're at the back of the line, so they missed out, and Detroit at the front of the line got him. But this is a guy, I mean, I don't know what you know about him. I mean, when you look at the numbers, there's nothing really eye-popping here. I mean, I guess you've got good measurables in 6'4", 285, and just kind of it would have been a depth guy, but the Bengals did not get him. And there's another question I want to ask you, but your impressions kind of that the Bengals were interested here and missed out.
Yeah, so in regards to Kaminsky specifically, he came into the league a few years ago with Atlanta. I think he's played only 500 career snaps with them in three seasons, so 2019, 2020, 2021, and I think he was at most like a role player during the 2020 season. He only played 13 snaps with the Falcons this past season. I don't know if he was injured for most of the year, or maybe he was just not very good, did not get on the field. But the Falcons did end up waiving or cutting him, I believe, a couple weeks ago back in late May. But I remember him like being propped up in the draft process of 2019. He was a fourth round pick that year, if you remember. I think he was actually one of the picks right before the Bengals took Michael Jordan at the tail end of the fourth round. But I think a guy that tested pretty well, 6'5", 275, looks like your prototypical Marvin Lewis edge defender. And this is the first draft that Zach Taylor was coaching the Bengals at the time. So I think he was a guy that was somewhat popular in draft circles, but hasn't really done much of anything in his NFL career. And when you see a guy get, you know, a lot of claims really early into his career, despite him not really doing much in the NFL, I think... excuse me, a lot of teams kind of go back on that college evaluation. And if he hasn't really shown much of anything beyond what he did in college, in this case, he went to Charleston in West Virginia. I think teams really lean on what they saw out of him as a collegiate player. He's still 26 years old, and maybe they feel like they're the team to get the most out of him, whereas his original team didn't really get much out of him at all. He only lasted 3 years with the team that drafted him. So I think there's that into the equation. Of the Bengals are just one of the handful of teams, or maybe several teams, to put a waiver claim into him. But obviously, being 31st in that order, they're just not going to get anyone really, unless other teams don't right. put a claim him in. So yeah, I think it's just like a bet on potential for him. He's still on the younger side. He was pretty athletic, I think, coming out of college, but not a guy that's done a lot in the NFL. And at this point, you can't really rely on him to be anything more than a surprise role player who can maybe make noise in camp. But the Bengals do have, I think, two open roster spots, and they seem pretty deep at defensive line right now. I think they have like 14 players, but they could feasibly add one more. And I think Kaminsky, for being your 15th defensive lineman, is not the worst option.
It is not. I mean, you see what Field Yates of ESPN says here. As popular of a player as I can ever recall on waivers, there were eight teams. We talked about this yesterday on the headline show: Lions, Commanders, Colts, Browns, Texans, Cardinals, Vikings, and Bengals. Bengals, like I said, you know, they missed out being at the back of the line there. But when you see, 41 total tackles, 4 tackles for loss, 5 quarterback hits, and 1.5 sacks as an edge defender with Atlanta. So when you look at the numbers, you know, you talked about measurables and whatnot. When you look at the numbers, the stats, it just kind of makes you wonder, you know, there has to be something there for eight teams to be involved in the running there to put a claim into this guy. I want to say this. I mean, does this news surprise you at all? Because you're getting Joseph Osai back from injury, you're getting Wyatt Hubert back from injury, you've added a Zachary Carter that seems to be a movable piece. You've got Cam Sample. All of the, I mean, what'd you say? 15th defensive lineman, right?
14 officially, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, he would have been the 15th, yeah. Yeah. So, I guess I'm just kind of getting your thoughts on how surprised you were about this in terms of the Bengals being out there. And do you think that this is going to be something now towards preseason, final cuts, all of that position where they just are going to look to add despite some of the names that we know on the roster and how many are coming back from maybe injuries last year?
Yeah, I don't think that adding Kaminsky would have impaired or hurt anyone else's chances of making the team. I think this is kind of interesting from the Falcoholic quote. After a year where the Falcons shifted him back from defensive tackle to outside linebacker and he just received 13 defensive snaps, the team has cut Kaminsky. So that's interesting to me how he started off as like an edge defender and then he was kind of working more inside maybe last offseason. And at 6'5", 275, like that's about what Sam Hubbard is. And he also has that versatility to play on the edge, but also move inside as a defensive tackle in pass rushing situations. You talk about 14 defensive linemen. They have three techniques right now. And maybe you have a handful of edges on the roster that can slide inside, but their depth inside, specifically at three technique, is very minimal. So maybe that's what they see in a guy like Kaminsky, to potentially give them a pass rushing boost at that spot. Now, again, he's not like the traditional athlete to play that spot necessarily, but considering he was available, he was a name in the draft process, I think that's more or less why you saw the Bengals and other teams put in claims for him, because he has potential versatility, but not proven versatility, which is why he's nothing more than a guy making vet minimum right now.
Yeah, so they just got a little bit of a surprise, and I think, you know, I mean, it's good to see them not just hanging out and not doing anything or not seeing opportunities to potentially improve their team, so it's nice to see that, but a little bit of an interesting one there. And then here, real quickly, as we move on, and before we get to our interview with Justin from Engraven Vids to talk about the Baltimore Ravens, this is just an interesting quote and set of circumstances here with Hayden Hurst, saying he believes that the, and this is on Cincy Jungle, and you know, you can find the quotes and stuff, but believes he made the right choice in joining the Bengals or the best choice for him, which is kind of low hanging fruit a little bit, because I mean, he's going to go to a team with a you know, good offense and a great quarterback, et cetera. But he just said in a press conference here, quote, "I made the right choice. We all know what nine, who's Joe Burrow, is capable of. He's incredible." And then this is interesting to me, John. I think this staff finally understands what I'm capable of. It's taken 5 years, unfortunately, but I think God put me in Cincinnati for a reason. I'm just going to do my job, buckle down, learn this playbook, and just work my ass off. That's all I can do. So this was one of those, you know, rental deals, and with the name and whatnot, it kind of was like, hey, this could be a, you know, a sneaky good decision. And now Hurst, I think that this staff finally understands what I'm capable of. A guy who was on a team in the Ravens that, you know, likes to use their tight ends. And then, you know, he was in Atlanta, maybe didn't get the best situation there just because of the status of that team when he was there. But I mean, I don't know. Are you in agreement there? Or do you think that this is going to be one of those seasons where you think that Hurst is going to kind of, you know, surprise a lot of people statistically speaking?
Yeah. Nothing from these quotes make me necessarily believe that, just because it's this time of year where you see just a lot of fluff talking about, oh, new right. situations, you know, best shape of your life. I will say, though, with Hayden Hurst, like, nothing in his life has come easy. Like, his story to get where he is now is remarkable. So he definitely has a unique and a valuable perspective on just going through the journey and just trying to find your place where I guess you belong. And with Hurst, it is unfortunate how, you know, he was the first round pick with the Ravens, a team that loves to use tight ends. And then they found, unfortunately for him, a more talented one in Mark Andrews 2 rounds later. He gets phased out of that offense. He gets traded. Atlanta uses him pretty well in his first season. And then they draft another more talented tight end in Kyle Pitts. Now Hurst feels like, I mean, and rightfully so, he should feel like the best tight end on this team, and that hasn't been the case for him. And I guess his entire NFL career, you can go back to South Carolina when he was like 24, 25 year old college student, kind of beaten up on SEC defensive backs there. And that's why I guess he ended up going in the first round. So this, to me, I mean, this is what OTAs are for these guys. Like, they're not putting in extensive hard work and practices right now. There's no pads necessarily, but it's just about ironing out the communications and really getting adjusted to the playbook and what is expected of you at whatever position that you're in. And if Hurst has, or is starting to develop a comfort level within the offense, within the scheme and everything in that nature, then that's obviously nothing but good news. And I think that's where the value of these practices are right now, specifically for newer guys like Hayden Hurst, who are just coming into their own in a new system. And if he feels that way right now, then I think by the time training camp and the preseason comes around, he'll be hitting the ground running, which is definitely good news.
And when we talked about Hayden Hurst a little while ago on the show, we noted that it's maybe not going to be a guy that, you know, puts up a massive amount of yards, maybe Kelsey-esque in terms of, you know, yardage and all of that. But where we see a lot of the work being done is, you know, extending drives and then effectiveness in the red zone potentially. So while the catches, like we talked about with Eifert in 2015, he wasn't a guy that had a 1,000-yard receiving season, but he was incredible in the red zone. And I mean, obviously different players here, but when you look at that and you kind of see what's going on there, I mean, that could be the fit. And, you know, as we noticed at the end of the postseason run there, the Bengals were having some trouble getting into the end zone, and having a player like this potentially could boost that. No knocks on CJ Uzomah or whomever else, but, you know, it seems as if he feels he's in a good position. The team knows how to use him. So, you know, that's that.
Pretty much. And we've talked about comparing a guy like Hurst to Uzama, specifically as athletes, and how there's potentially more athleticism potential just within the scheme that the Bengals want to run. And it kind of felt like with Uzama, while he was still productive here in this past year when the offense really took off, it didn't really seem like they were getting the most out of that position necessarily. And that's not like a knock at Uzama, but I think there's a difference in terms of the athlete that Hayden Hurst is and Uzama is, and credit to Uzama for carving out this career that he has. But I think there's definitely more that Hayden Hurst can do. And he's not necessarily a young player. He's on the verge of turning 30 at a position where, you know, the lifespan is not very long. So I think he recognizes this opportunity to play on a one-year deal in an offense that is going to be spread out, and he could be used as a slot receiver, as like a big, like a big slot, if you will, not just attached to the formation. And that could do wonders for him unlocking whatever he has left to offer as a receiver, and especially playing on a one-year deal with everything that he's gone through in his career. Like, he doesn't need any more added motivation, but I guess it certainly doesn't help playing on a one-year deal looking for that next, or maybe that first big deal in his career.
Yeah, and it's secretly one of those guys that's, I guess, you know, one of those behind-the-scenes Bengals a little bit in some ways, where I'm just excited to see what you know, what he can do this year. And I know he's excited about the opportunity, albeit on a short-term deal. Maybe he parlays it into a longer-term one based on what happens here this year. All right, well, as we teased, we have an interview with Justin from Engraven Vids. We're going to pin the YouTube account in the live chats here and all of that for you. It was previously recorded, so you're going to see John and I in a little bit of different outfits than what we're wearing right now. But it's a really good one. We talked a lot of different things, and he is a treat to speak with. So without further ado, this is, you're going to get some information on the Baltimore Ravens. We had a lot of things to talk about here with Justin, and we hope you enjoy it. All right, so as we teased for almost a week now, we are joined by our first guest to help preview the AFC North and the rest of the happenings within the division, and to talk about the Baltimore Ravens, one of our absolute favorite content creators, one of our absolute favorites on YouTube, Justin, the architect of Engraven Vids, the YouTube channel that has almost 55,000 subscribers. Awesome, awesome work, and that's just a testament to all you do, Justin. How you doing, man? Good to have you back on the show.
I'm doing really good. How y'all doing?
We're good, man.
Solid, yeah.
Yeah, we're good. We're not 55K solid, but we're doing pretty good, my man. You do excellent work, and we'll put up your YouTube channel and how to get people to just subscribe in just a little bit here. But for those who do not know and who do not, if you are a Bengals fan only, doesn't even matter. He talks a lot of Ravens, but he talks a lot of NFL on his channel and does awesome work. Both kind of shorter episodes, some longer stuff, but does great work, and we can't say enough about that. So go subscribe to Justin's channel. Let's kind of dive right into it. I guess we can start. Let's kind of start from last year and kind of work our way to the present, if you will. Tough year for the Ravens last year. I mean, they were in it to the end, and I think it's a testament to Harbaugh, the staff, and how that team is run. But tough year injury wise and whatnot. They were in it towards the end there. But kind of your takeaways from that season. Was it just a lost season, or was it, hey, you know, good effort based on everything that's happened, a little bit of both? I mean, I don't know, your side of the table. What are you thinking about how everything played out last year?
Yeah, definitely a little bit of both. Because like you mentioned, they were in it to the very end, to the very last game when Ravens played the Steelers in week 18. And they could have actually gotten into the playoffs if they would have won, and they needed a little bit of help to get in. But they obviously lost, and they didn't make it. And I know a lot of Ravens fans were kind of divided about that. Like, hey, if we get into the playoffs, what's the point? Because our team is so beat up. And then some were like, hey, we might as well just lose now. We get a higher draft pick. But then some were like me, I wanted them to get into the playoffs, regardless of the draft pick status, whatever. I wanted them to get into the playoffs because I know they wouldn't have had much of a chance. But if you're in the playoffs, then you have a chance. But anyway, last season, just the injuries, man. Injuries. And it started before the season even started. Before they even touched that week one game against the Raiders, they had been so beat up and they had lost so many significant guys, too. You lose LaMarcus Peters for the year. You lost Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins for the year. Nick Boyle was banged up. Ronnie Stanley, I don't think he made it through the whole week one game. And then he was lost for the rest of the year. Derek Wolf, I mean, I can go down the whole list, and it's a very, very long list. And then, of course, guys got lost throughout the season, too. But with as many guys as the Ravens lost through the season, we still had the guy that our team runs through. That being, of course, Lamar Jackson. And when Lamar Jackson, he was even hurting during the season, but he was playing and Ravens were winning for the most part. They were at one point, they were not only top of the AFC North, but top of the AFC. Ravens were sitting at 8-3, and it was like, wow, first place in the AFC. That's crazy, especially with all the injuries. Then Ravens lost a couple games. Then against the Browns, Lamar Jackson got hurt. And that would be the last game that he would play in for the remainder of the season. And everything just continued to go downhill from there. Of course, those games, been hearing a lot about, especially recently. Not even recently, really, just all offseason. The Ravens games against the Bengals. There's been a lot of trash talk going back and forth amongst Ravens and Bengals fans for those. Because I know Ravens fans are like, hey, you guys beat up on an injured team. And Bengals fans are like, hey, what about last year? Y'all beat up on an injured team and we didn't complain, but it's all fun and games, man. But last season was tough. It was tough because especially the way that the Ravens roster was constructed, we all felt like the Ravens like really had a shot at doing something special. Even if it wasn't Super Bowl, it just felt like it. Ravens had a shot at a very special season. And then they just got hit by injury after injury after injury, and it just really just ruined everything.
Yeah, that dynamic between Bengals fans and Ravens fans, I feel like it's taken on a new life, maybe. I don't.
Yeah.
I guess because the Bengals, you know, finally won a playoff game and, you know, kind of beat our chests a little bit, but, like, I don't know. Like, do you have anything more to, like, expand upon that? Like, is do you feel like the discussions are, I guess, relevant, or is it just a lot of just useless noise right now?
Oh no, I mean it's two very passionate fan bases, but I do love that sort of rivalry with the fan bases have been reignited. It's been a lot of trash talking. I see it every day. Kind of get tired of seeing it, kind of. But this season is gonna be really fun. And I think it's a lot of pain that's in both fan bases. And I think more recently under Lamar, the Ravens, they had really been beating the Bengals every year. They had been taking care of business against the Bengals every year. But then last year happens, and even in the game that Lamar did play in, the Bengals end up beating up on the Ravens. And then the Bengals not only did that, but they did what the Ravens haven't done. And they not only won in the playoff, but they made it to the Super Bowl in Joe Burrow's first full season playing. And I know that that's painful for Ravens fans to see that. Like, man, like, not only is it, especially because it's a team within your division that made it to the playoffs before you did, especially with the 2019 season, 2020, 2021. Ravens have had multiple chances, but Bengals go. And of course, they did have to have some bad seasons in order to get higher draft picks. But they go, they draft a Joe Burrow, then he gets his guy Jamar Chase, and even the year before too, got T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd has been there forever. You know, we all remember the 4th and 12, unfortunately. But that 4th and 12, it actually helped get us Lamar Jackson. So it's not all bad. But with the Bengals, for them to have made it to the Super Bowl like that, and the Ravens still fighting and clawing and haven't even reached the AFC championship. I think that's where a lot of the animosity it comes in between Bengals and Ravens fans. And I know Ravens fans, that the comeback is, hey, y'all lost in the Super Bowl. We've never lost a Super Bowl 2-0. But Bengals fans are like, hey, those Super Bowls are way back then. And it's all about what have you done recently. And y'all haven't gotten there with Lamar. We got there second year with Joe Burrow. So It's been, again, like I said, it's been fun. You hear a lot of interesting takes on the matter, and we'll continue to hear those. I just I can't wait for regular season, because it's gonna be nonstop, like back and forth throughout the rest of the summer and off season, and I'm just ready for regular season when it comes to that.
Talking with Justin, the architect of Engraven Vids, the great YouTube channel that talks a lot of Ravens, but some NFL as well. He also has another podcast, the Team Keep It Clean podcast, so you can check that one out too. A little bit of football and some other stuff on that one. So go subscribe to both. We'll have the links to those in the description for the show and in the live chats for you there. So make sure to subscribe to those. Does awesome work there. You mentioned name as as one of the major injured players for the Ravens last year, and kind of a bridge question from last year and talking more about into this year. A lot of Bengals fans are familiar, because a lot of Bengals fans are Ohio State fans. They are familiar with J.K. Dobbins, and Dobbins was a guy, showed some things early in his career, and then it seemed as if he was poised to have a big role last year before the injury. So I wanted to see if you could confirm that or deny that, I guess. Yeah. But also what's ahead for him this next year, because the way that the Ravens have seemingly, and we're going to talk about the draft class and stuff in a little bit, but the way they have seemingly rebuilt their team, or kind of built back up their team from the injuries, is a little bit more run centric and kind of what they were doing a couple of years ago. So J.K. Dobbins' outlook, and what was the plan last year? What's the plan this year?
For J.K. Dobbins, he was looking to be their guy for them at running back. Of course, they still had Gus Edwards, but J.K. was looking to be that feature back for the Ravens. And one thing that they continued to talk about last year, and they've been talking about it this year too, they want to get the backs involved, especially J.K. Dobbins, more involved in the passing game. So last year, it was going to be his time to shine. It was going to be his time to sort of break out. But of course, the injury in week three of the preseason, it changed all of that. But this year with the Ravens, with J.K., I think they will still expect him to be their guy, but at the same time, they have to also prepare just in case anything goes wrong with the rehab. I know he hasn't really been practicing yet. They said he was recently on the jugs machine at OTAs, but not really doing much work. And that was expected. So training camp is when we'll really get a lot of those questions answered when it comes to a lot of the guys that they lost, but specifically with J.K. Dobbins. I think that they're really setting it up to where he has another opportunity to take a jump. And a big thing that could have, if he would have even been healthy last year, that might have hindered him a little bit, would have been the offensive line. But the Ravens have made sure they shore up that offensive line, both through the draft and through free agency as well. And health is obviously going to be a big factor. I think health was one of the Ravens, actually the Ravens' biggest enemy last year, because they could not defeat it for anything. And it literally took out their whole team. So this year, hopefully J.K. Dobbins can really bounce back. He can have a full recovery. And Gus Edwards too, and Justice Hill. Because Ravens, they lost all three of they lost their top three running backs last year. They had to bring in guys like Devontae Freeman, who he started off slow, but ended up catching on a lot more toward as the season went on. They brought in from the Saints. Oh, I cannot think of his name right now off the top of my head. But they at one point they brought in Le'Veon Bell. That didn't work out. it was rough last year. It was rough last year at running back. But this year, hopefully, the Ravens can have all of their guys in the stable.
That was so wild. Like right before the season, it was just like hit after hit after hit. I'm like, who the hell is going to be lining next to Lamar Jackson? But that's just like the Ravens do. Like they just find ways to get guys on the field and get the most out of them. And I guess like where my main like question is now is really with the receivers, because it made sense to me. Like if you weren't going to pay Marquise Brown, if you can get a first round pick for him, that makes a lot of sense. Like I guess now I look at what that team has a receiver, and it's Rashad Bateman, and maybe like a lot of question marks. Like what seems to be like the plan for replacing like the impact and the presence that Marquise Brown has, because I'm a fan of Bateman, but he hasn't really done too much just as a first year player, now a second year player.
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. And yeah, a lot of question marks, a lot of question marks at receiver. A lot of us are still wondering what the Ravens are going to do, if anything, because Rashad Bateman, it was crazy again last year, injuries. Rashad Bateman missed like the first five, six games due to injury. And then he came back and Lamar was playing for a little bit, but then Lamar ended up getting hurt. So that just threw everything off of them. But Rashad Bateman, he looks like he is the part. He looks like he's going to be pretty good, very good route runner, good hands, got a good amount of speed too. But after that, it's just, and even including Rashad Bateman a bit too, there's a lot of, Ravens have a lot of unproven guys at the wide receiver position. They have a Devin Duvernay. They have a James Prochet. And they have a Tylan Wallace. Rashad Bateman and Tylan Wallace are going into their second year. Devin Duvernay and James Prochet are going into their third year. But none of the receivers have really gotten a consistent amount of passes, catches, and it's just a lot of question mark there. So I would expect them to bring in a veteran wide receiver. I mean, I've been expecting them to do that for a little while. I was when they traded Hollywood Brown away, because he said he didn't want to be there. He was not a fan of the offense, the style of offense. And that's something that he had voiced multiple times. And the Ravens were like, hey, okay, you don't want to be here, but we'll trade you. And they did get very, very good value. You get a first-round pick for a 2019 first-round pick. That's a good flip. But when they traded Hollywood Brown away, I was expecting them to address wide receiver in the draft. But I think a lot of the guys that they were looking at, they got taken early. And yes, they just didn't want to settle. So I can respect it, but now it's like, all right, what's the plan going to be? Because I don't see them going into the season with those being their top four guys, Bateman, Prochet, Duvernay, and Wallace. And then they've signed quite a few undrafted rookie free agents at wide receiver too. But I just don't see them going into the season without a veteran.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what the Ravens did, and I'll share something here in just a second, what the Ravens did in the draft. So I've got kind of a two-part question for you, just kind of your overall impressions in terms of the class, and we'll show all the names here in just a second. But what the Ravens did in the draft with their class, I personally, for the most part, loved it. I think I would have liked to have seen maybe a wide receiver that, like we just talked about, you know, a bigger name wide receiver, but, you know, I mean, they got a lot of other big names at offensive line, on defense and whatnot. So I think they did a lot of good work there. And, you know, because we Bengals fans and those who cover the team have just are so self-absorbed about the Bengals and how great they did last year and how great they're going to be going forward.
Yeah.
We kind of have, at least I do a little bit, we kind of have this impression that a lot of teams and maybe even those within the division are kind of playing a little bit of keeping up with the Joneses in terms of, you know, how the Bengals have built their team, how they built their offense. And when you look at some of the things that the Ravens did, particularly on the defensive side of the ball in the draft and in free agency, it maybe points to that a little bit. I don't know if you have a sentiment of that, but I'll pull up the names here. But what did you kind of, just to start with, what did you kind of think of the draft class and how the Ravens did in April there?
I thought it was really good. They got a lot of value in this draft class. A lot of guys who were known as like top 15, top 20 picks, they ended up getting them later on. Started off with Kyle Hamilton. And again, with the way that a lot of teams build, they build to beat teams in their division first. I remember after that, the last Bengals game, I said I couldn't call Joe Burrow anything but 500 Burrow, since he threw for 500 yards against Ravens defense. But Ravens, they, of course, they recognized that. They noticed that. And then they didn't have Marlon Humphrey, Marcus Peters. They were missing a lot of guys. And some of those guys will be back. Some of those guys are free agents and whatnot. But with Kyle Hamilton, it was like, okay, they're trying to show up the back end. They don't want all those passes sailing over the top of their head, because they not only drafted Kyle Hamilton, but about a month prior to that, when free agency opened up, they signed Marcus Williams, a safety from the Saints. So they're really looking to get the secondary right. And then about a week and a half ago, they ended up signing Kyle Fuller too. And then in this draft, they drafted two cornerbacks. So just to add to the depth, Tyler Linderbaum, Ravens fans, we have been just there's been a big frustration with the offensive line for a while. Really ever since 2019, the offensive line was really good. But a lot of times I say, I feel like they were slightly overrated. They were still really good, but they were slightly overrated just because of Lamar, because of everything that he could do in the backfield as far as making defenders miss and whatnot. But 2020, the offensive line, it got ugly. Then Ronnie Stanley got injured. And then last year, too, offensive line was very, very ugly. Ronnie Stanley was injured again. So the Ravens are hopefully one, Ronnie Stanley comes back. But with them drafting Tyler Lindenbaum, them over the past few years, they've had a lot of inconsistency at the center position. They've had guys like Matt Skura, who started off good in 2019, but then he got hurt, and he was never the same after that. They've had guys like Patrick McCary. They've had Tristan Colon-Castillo. And then last year, their starter was Bradley Bozeman, and he was a center coming out of college, but he hadn't played center since college. So for his first 3 years in the league, they had him playing left guard. And then in that fourth year, they had him center. And he did an all right job, but there was that lack of consistency. So now with Lindenbaum, he's somebody that played center throughout college, and now he can continue to play center in the pros too. And he's looking to be the Ravens starter. So that should help the offensive line. And again, like we talked about earlier, I keep repeating it, but health is such a big factor when it comes to everything. Travis Jones. I was somebody who wanted the Ravens to draft Jordan Davis. I expected the Ravens to draft Jordan Davis from Georgia. And I think a lot of people did, too. And I think the Eagles did as well. That's why in the draft, they ended up leapfrogging the Ravens, and they selected Jordan Davis right before the Ravens were on the clock. So that was a really good move by the Eagles. But somebody who was regarded as the second-best interior defensive lineman is Travis Jones. So the Ravens got him, and that can just really add to the youth movement. And he's a good mix of just strength and just really raw power with pushing an offensive lineman back. Now, one pick that I was a little questionable about was David Ojabo. We know with David Ojabo, he was looking like he was going to be a first-round pick, but then, of course, he got the Achilles injury. I think it was at his pro day. Anything that the Ravens can get out of him right now, I think it'll be considered a bonus. Because I can't really expect much from him this year, sort of like a red shirt year almost. But he reminds me of Ravens' first round draft pick from last year, and they're actually friends. They went to high school together, and that's Odafe Owe. Odafe Owe, he was very, very raw coming out of college. He hadn't even played football for very long, and it was the same way with David Ojabo. Very, very raw. He hasn't played football for very long, but he put on a lot of good tape. At Michigan, and he did his thing. He was going to be a first-round pick, but, of course, again, the injury. So with the Ravens selecting him, that's a selection that's – I mean, obviously the whole draft is for the future, but that's definitely a selection that's more so for the future. Because I can't expect him – all right, he recovered from Achilles surgery now, and he's back. All right, he's going to be a beast right away. I can't expect that. I think that would be unrealistic expectations. They also drafted – they went tight end crazy. With Kala and Isaiah Likely. And it's crazy because those two tight ends before 2021, going into the 2021 season, they were ranked the number one and two tight ends in NCAA. But with Kala, he's gotten comped to Mark Andrews a lot. So that's obviously a good thing. Big red zone target. And with Likely, he's somebody that he's a tight end, but he seems to be like a tight end receiver, sort of a guy to stretch the field. So we're looking forward to that. Tyler Beatty, that was their last pick in was the sixth or seventh round. I think it was the sixth round. So he's somebody very explosive guy, got good hands coming out of the backfield. I think that he'll end up being there. I think they'll end up keeping four running backs. So he'll end up being up in the mix. But he's somebody that could fill in just in case. Just in case J.K. Dobbins is not all the way ready to go. Just in case Gus Edwards isn't all the way ready to go. Ravens have a stable of running backs right now. Of course, everybody can't make it. So we'll see what happens. But I do think I envision him being on the roster come game time. Just to move back, I think it was in the fourth round where they got Daniel Falele. Just a monster. And he's somebody – that a sort of developmental tackle for the Ravens, somebody that can, with Ronnie Stanley, again, big question mark on Ronnie Stanley if he's going to remain healthy. But the Ravens this offseason, they signed Morgan Moses. So he's expected to be the right tackle. But just in case Ronnie Stanley's not ready, you might have to do some shifting around and whatnot. But Daniel Falele, just this giant. And this guy, even bigger than Orlando Brown. But somebody, he's pretty raw, but he's somebody that they expect to be able to fill in the pinch, somebody who they can develop and just see how things go. And hopefully he can turn into a really good tackle for the Ravens. I'm trying to think if I missed anybody. The two cornerbacks, the two tight ends, offensive lines, safety.
There was like 20 picks, so you know. Like,
I think he did a pretty good job on it. Yeah, no, that was good. That was good.
Yeah, they did. They did have 11 picks, and one thing that surprised me, I just knew I was 1,000% sure because they were going into the draft with 10 picks. I was 1,000% sure. Like, Ravens are not drafting 10. They're not drafting 10 rookies. There's no way. They're gonna trade for somebody. They're gonna trade up, move around in the draft. But they proved me wrong, and they ended up taking 11. So yeah. That was
it. Not going to draft 10. They're going to draft one more. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But at least five of them, I know, elicited a response from Bengals fans like, God damn, Ravens. Like, why the hell would you do that? And I like what you said about Ojabo. You know, it's a bonus pick. You know, it's like a redshirt year to see what he can do. It doesn't hurt that, you know, he played under the current now defensive coordinator for the Ravens. And I wanted to talk about McDonald because, you know, I'm a believer that I think the NFL should look towards college defenses to really start, you know, help evolving and, you know, best preparing against some of the modern offenses. But I didn't know is that McDonald actually worked under John Harbaugh with the for the Ravens for 7 years. I thought he was just with his brother Jim for that time, but he's like 34 years old and he knows the Ravens system pretty well. So I guess my question is, now that you're in the post, you know, Wink era, like how much different is this defense going to be considering he coached under Martindale for like 7 years?
I think it's going to have some differences. I think it's going to have a lot of similarities too, since he had been around. He was only in Michigan for like a year. And now he's right back, but with a different role. Something that I would expect from him and my hope for him would really be to not put guys in bad situations. We know with Wink, and we love Wink, but Wink was live by, die by that blitz. He does not care who's out there. He did not care what cornerbacks he had out there, what safeties, what play. He was going to blitz you like crazy. And that the thing with that is, like, it can be a gift and a curse because there would be like a lack of adjustments, and there would just be – it would seem like there would be a lack of awareness to what the situation was. You can't blitz the same. If your cornerbacks are Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters, you could blitz one way. But if your cornerbacks are Robert Jackson and Kevon Seymour, Kevin Tolliver, then you cannot blitz the same way. So I just hope for Mike McDonald's sake that there's more situational awareness to what's going on with the opposing defense.
We'll get you out of here in just a couple minutes here, talking once again with Justin, the head guy at the YouTube channel Engraven Vids. Got a ton of subscribers over there. We, of course, are one of them, so you got to be one as well. Almost 55,000 subscribers over on his YouTube channel. Does great work covering the Ravens and the NFL. Before we get you out of here with maybe an outlook, maybe even a record prediction if you do that, I'm going to flip the question that John just did and talk about the other side of the ball. We've touched on it a little bit in terms of what the Ravens have done this offseason in free agency and the draft in terms of altering what the offense looks. I mean, we talked about the defense, but altering also what the offense looks like. You talked about Likely, you talked about Charlie Kohler, and then of course Dobbins and whatnot. So there's kind of a sentiment maybe saying, with now Brown out of the picture, kind of the deep threat, speedy guy on the wide receiver group, now this is going to be tight end centric. This is going to be run heavy. This is going to be Lamar maybe doing some ad lib work and going back to where he was a couple of years ago, really taking the league by storm. Is that a sentiment you think that's kind of true as we look, you know, our mile high view of the Ravens here? Is that kind of a sentiment that you share, or do you think that there's a little bit more sizzle, a little bit more deep threats going on here than we see from the outside looking in?
I certainly hope that it's more. But I think that the way that the Ravens have really built this roster, the way that they signed free agents, the way that they've drafted, it seems like they're trying to go back to more that 2019 style. Just really trying to just have a really dominant physical game. What I'm hoping for, and this, of course, to be determined, I'm hoping that it's a mix of 2019, but a mix of last year, too. Because last year, I know a lot of people, they will continue to do it, but a lot of people, they doubt Lamar Jackson as a passer. I know that's a conversation that comes up every single day. Oh, Lamar Jackson, he can't pass the ball. But Lamar Jackson, he showed multiple times last year. Not only can he pass the ball, but they can come back from behind and come back from being down. They can air it out. And I loved it. Now, I do think that the offense changed based off of the situation. With a lot of guys being hurt. But I'm hoping that they can build off of that, but now have, again, health, keep mentioning it, have health, but also have a better offensive line. So now my biggest question mark for the Ravens is still at the wide receiver position. What are they going to do to add to that? You know, we have Rashad Bateman. He's expected to be pretty good. I have Mark Andrews. He is great. But what are we going to do in the passing game? Who's going to add to it? And not only because there's so many question marks, but because there's so little depth. Because right now, the guys who we would think are essentially locks to make the team at the receiver position, Bateman, DuVernay, Prochet, and Wallace, what happens if one of those guys go down? What happens if one of those guys are injured? Then what? So not only to as far as, for my opinion, them adding a receiver will not only help to just diversify the passing game, but just really give them more quality depth. But as far as the offense, yeah, it seems like they really want to do everything in their power to give their offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, absolutely no excuses this year because they built the offense to cater to Greg Roman, to cater to his strengths. So I think they just want it to be like, all right, Greg Roman, G-Ro, we're giving you everything in your power. Go to work. Show us what you got. Because I think this is really a make or break year for Greg Roman, and really a make or break year for the Ravens as a whole. With Lamar Jackson being in his fifth year option, it's been pretty it's been publicly stated that he hasn't been talking to the Ravens when it comes to contract. And in my opinion, the Ravens have not. They haven't done enough to give him a reason to stay, especially when you look at the design of this offense. A lot of people think it's catered to Lamar Jackson, but it's really catered to Greg Roman. So we'll see what happens with that. He, as of right now, he hasn't been at the OTAs. And while that's not the biggest of the big deal, when you hear John Harbaugh, he was asked, hey, where's Lamar at? John Harbaugh's like, oh, I'll let him tell you about that. I'll let him answer that for you. And then Greg Roman, he was even asked in the press, hey, well, what's going on with Lamar not being here? And Greg Roman was like, oh, I'll let Lamar give you a chance to speak to him about that. So it just seems like the vibe is a little bit off between Lamar Jackson and the coaching staff. And it just seems to be in this sort of like this weird place right now. Hopefully it ends up being a bunch of nothing and they can have a lot of success. But it's to be determined. But this year is such a big year. Like Ravens are really at a big crossroads when it comes to the future of this team. I know there's also been a lot of talk, hey, if Lamar doesn't sign this offseason, even next offseason, there's the franchise tag talk. So, you know, with the franchise tag, like I know you guys are going through that with Jesse Bates right now, a franchise tag can get ugly. It can get really, really ugly. So we'll just see. It's so many directions that this whole thing could take. But yeah, Ravens, they got a lot to work on. So it's been crazy and it's going to be even crazy.
Man, like you kind of answered my own question. Like I would ask you, if you were Eric DaCosta, how do you get Lamar like back to the negotiation tables? But, you know, it just seems like it's like with Jesse Bates, man. It just seems like right now it's just a matter of timing and, you know, things may work out and they may not.
Mm-hmm. That's it right there.
Well, Justin, we will we'll get you out of here. We asked for like 15 minutes and we doubled you up on that. So we appreciate the time, man. But we love talking with you. Honestly, you're one of our favorite guests that we bring on here. Your insight, your knowledge is top notch, and that your YouTube channel and its numbers and its videos is, obviously reflects that. And we'll pump that in just a second. Before we do, what do you think? I know it's hard to look in the crystal ball as we sit here now in early June, because especially with the unfortunate situation with the Ravens, when all those injuries occurred so late, kind of in the summer, right before the season, it's hard to predict. But in terms of a bounce back, in terms of kind of how you're looking at the division right now, how are you seeing things play out with the Ravens as they try and rebound from last year, and just kind of how things are shaping up in the AFC North in general?
If they can stay healthy, then I'll say either divisional or AFC championship. It just depends on so much, man. If they can stay healthy, I can't say Super Bowl right now. I just can't. I'm not sold on the wide receivers right now, and I'm not completely sold on their linebacker group and their pass rush. So we'll see what happens with that. But so I say either division or AFC championship. Obviously, depending on so many different things. As far as the regular season record, I would probably say like 12-5.
Okay, fair enough. And I think a lot of people would be hard pressed to really kind of argue with that, because the Ravens' reputation, who they are as an organization, and like you said, they've when they're healthy and they've got things kind of built back up, they're a tough team to beat, no doubt about it. Well, it's been awesome talking with you, Justin. We appreciate the time that you always give this show. Before we do, I'm going to post this right here in the link to this YouTube channel. If you have not subscribed, I think a lot of our listeners have subscribed, at least I hope so, because you've been on our channel or been on our videos a bunch of times and have done awesome work for us. You continue to do so on your channel. Just real quick, you've got your channel and Graven Vids. You also have another podcast as well, Keep It Clean. But just tell us a little bit about what you do there. You got some bite-sized videos. You got some longer ones and a lot of good stuff.
Hey, I appreciate it. Yeah, the YouTube channel is Graven Vids. It's Team Keep It Clean, so it's family-friendly. So anybody is welcome to come through. I am obviously a Ravens fan, and we talk a lot of Ravens literally every single day. We post videos every single day. During this regular season, during the off season, sometimes multiple videos per day, depending on what's going on. So feel free to subscribe. And even if you're not a Ravens fan, we just talk about the NFL just as a whole in general, especially within the AFC North. So it's always fun. We enjoy ourselves a lot on there. Don't take ourselves too serious, anything like that. And Twitter, Instagram is also Graven Vids too, if you want to check it out.
Awesome. Well, you do great work. We respect the heck out of what you do there. And thanks for always being so kind to our show and talking Ravens. Hopefully we can have you back on either maybe at the onset of the season or maybe when these two teams clash. There's going to be a lot of talk about those rematches this year. There's no doubt about it. Like you said, those Twitter battles. But but thanks for everything, man. Appreciate your time. And this has been a lot of fun catching up with you.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Appreciate y'all having me on.
Thank you, Justin.
Take care. All right, so that was our chat with Justin of Graven Vids. I put the link in the live chat for at least the Facebook and YouTube feed, so go subscribe to his channel. He does a lot of stuff. Yeah, I know it's Raven-centric, but he does AFC North stuff, a lot of different stuff on the NFL, and then, of course, a lot of stuff on the Ravens. So at least if you want to get a pulse on what's going on that side of the fence and hear his thoughts, he was always pretty complimentary, John, about the Bengals through their run to the Super Bowl. I mean, a lot of Ravens fans were not that way, and he was just saying, hey, you know what they've built up, it's been incredible to watch. And you know, he's got a good perspective on things.
100%. Like, I feel like he definitely calls it like he sees it, and he doesn't shy away from criticizing the Ravens when, you know, things aren't necessarily going their way. Like, I feel like the most surprising thing that he said to me was that the Ravens haven't done enough to convince Lamar to stay. And like, the idea of a MVP quarterback leaving his team after his rookie contract, it's unheard of. You don't really, you never really see it, right? Which is why the franchise tag was brought up with him and how it can get kind of ugly. And it was interesting hearing someone covering and following the Ravens hear their perspective on the Lamar Jackson situation, because I mean, it's not as kind of topsy-turvy as another AFC North quarterback is going through, but it's definitely a story to watch this season. A quarterback playing in a contract year, again, who has made his mark in the NFL in more ways than one. It's going to be interesting to watch.
It will be. It will be. And you know, I'm seeing some comments in our live chats about, you know, Lamar being a bigger deal, obviously, than Bates and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, something to definitely monitor. Do we want to do a quick behind-the-scenes Bengal, John, kind of an abbreviated version so we don't go long, or do we want to save it?
Yeah, I can just run through it real quick because I don't have really anything prepared. But I did notice yesterday during the open media OTA session that a receiver was getting a decent number of looks during like 7-on-7s and 11-on-11s. I think it was the first iterations of them. It was Kwame Lassiter the second. And I was not expecting to hear him necessarily make headlines. I don't know if it was with the first team or the second team offense. It sounded like it was with the first team offense, which kind of makes sense because there's not a ton of depth at receiver right now. And I think that's why it was interesting that the Bengals signed four undrafted free agents at the wide receiver position. And when Lassiter was announced as one of them, I think he drew the most hype from fans because of his production at Kansas and also his ability to be a punt returner. But I think now is a good opportunity to just quickly review this insane story that he went through about a month before Zach Taylor was hired as the Bengals head coach. Lassiter's dad, Lassiter Sr., who also played at Kansas and then played, I think, safety for the Arizona Cardinals, he passed away when Lassiter was just 20. I think he was turning 21 in a couple of weeks, and he had to go through that, you know, in college. And he was obviously very close to his dad. He was playing at his dad's alma mater. And that, and right before that was when he was really starting to elevate himself within the Kansas offense. And in his 3 years there, he slowly grew more and more of a focal point in that offense. And I remember back to last college football season, because Kansas is terrible. Like, they're just one of the worst Division I teams in college. And I think he mentioned, like, you know, it's not ideal, you know, playing in Kansas because you don't get a lot of NFL looks necessarily. But I remember in October, because Oklahoma was playing there and there was like no one at the game for Kansas, and they were beating Oklahoma through the first half, and Kansas was like allowing students and whatever to come in to watch the game. Unfortunately for Kansas, they still lost by 12, but they made a game and it was competitive. And Lassiter had like 7 receptions for 101 yards. He led the team in receiving for that game. So he had a pretty good game against obviously 4 or 5 star talented defenders for Oklahoma. And they kind of carried that momentum into, I guess, the end of the season and then the draft process. Unfortunately for him, he did not get drafted. But I think another connection here, or maybe the biggest connection, is with Darren Simmons. And I always forget that Simmons also went to Kansas all the way back. And this is actually, it's crazy because Darren Simmons played with Lassiter's dad. And this is the first time he's ever coached the son of a former teammate of his, which is insane, but also really relevant because Lassiter isn't just a guy who's going to have to prove himself on special teams. Special teams could be the reason why he makes the roster altogether, because they need someone who can push Trent Taylor at punt returner and also just that backup at slot receiver, because that's where Lassiter played the majority of his snaps at Kansas. He was a really active run blocker in those when he was aligned there, and obviously his production grew in that offense. But again, it's Kansas. He can't really take too much passing production because they don't have a quarterback. But the fact that he had experience returning punts, and he's like one of the only guys that Simmons brought in this year to really challenge Trent Taylor, the fact that there's a connection there with his dad. He obviously knew him pretty well. I'm sure he knew about Lassiter the second, you know, growing and when he was young, because he kind of kept in touch with his dad. And now he's within the system. Simmons is looking for some competition. There's a really good chance that Lassiter makes this team, not just because of his ability as a receiver and the fact that they need maybe one or two more explosive options there, but that connection with Darren Simmons, I'm really, really intrigued at how that unfolds in training camp and how many opportunities that Lassiter gets to push Trent Taylor and if he takes advantage of it. We talked a lot about Puka Williams last year, another guy from Kansas who had the potential to be something as a punt returner, but he never really did anything in the preseason. I think he was injured too. If Lassiter stays healthy throughout August, I think he has a really good chance of making their team.
That's a very good point. And a guy I know they were excited about landing for sure. You know, not the biggest guy, not, you know, the fastest or any of that kind of stuff. But I mean, you look at, like you said, 59 catches, 653 yards, 3 touchdowns last year with Kansas, not really an offensive, you know, powerhouse, so to speak. And then of course, on the punt return side, eight returns for 108 yards. I mean, not a huge, huge sample size of things, but obviously, you know, a guy that they think could bring versatility, maybe push some of the guys on the roster and maybe give them, you know, some opportunities on special teams for, you know, because that Trent Taylor did some nice things towards the end of the season as a punt returner, stabilized some things after, you know, Darius Phillips and the San Francisco 49ers adventure and all of that. So there's a lot there where you go, hey, there's an opportunity here where he can find a niche for himself. And what a story it would be based on that. You know, you look at Kwame Lassiter Sr. died at 49. What I read, I believe, was of a heart attack while working out. I mean, just an unexpected thing that's crazy and, you know, incredibly sad. And this would be one of those that we talked about this a couple of weeks ago with this, you know, some players on this behind the scenes Bengals series we've been doing. This is one of those guys I feel like would be, if the Bengals were on Hard Knocks, this would be the guy that they would be following around because of that story, who his dad was and what he potentially can do for this team and trying to grind his way onto the roster.
Yeah. And Lassiter, I think during his career at Kansas, he played there 5 years. He had, I think, 30 total punt returns. And then this past season, it was like his highest average with 13.5 yards mm-hmm. per return. And that's, again, it's going to be his best chance of making the team. But as we've seen in past years, it's not always a clean transition. Like, I think Darius Phillips had some experience in college returning punts, but obviously it never really caught on with him in the NFL. With Trent Taylor, he kind of specialized that, and that's one of the reasons why he stuck around in the NFL for so long. He's got to nail down the consistency aspect with it. And the same goes for Puka Williams. He's still here and still on the team and can still maybe push for that spot as well. But Lassiter has experience, and that definitely helps. But experience can only take you so far, and he just has to nail the consistency part of it down, or else he's not going to get past Taylor. And that's why I think Brandon Tate lasted so long at that spot under Simmons. And that's why Simmons just trusted them, because while Adam Jones provided the spark, they couldn't really always do or have him back there because he was valuable on defense. They need someone who can not only provide the spark, but can nail the consistency. So that's the first thing that Lassiter has to be able to prove with whatever opportunities he's given.
I'm sure I'd love to get Darren Simmons on the show at some point, but I'm sure if you asked point blank, I mean, I would think that consistency and trust are just tent poles of special teams play. And when you get that from some of your players, you know, that makes your job easier. And that's why, quite honestly, Darren Simmons is one of the most well-respected assistant coaches in the NFL and has gotten some brief looks at head coaching jobs and whatnot. But yeah, good call on Kwame Lassiter, a behind the scenes Bengal that not a lot of people will be talking about right now, but perhaps definitely in training camp and preseason play with some increased snaps there. So good stuff. Let's drop the mic and get out of here. John, what do you got for us?
Not really anything new, I guess. It's a lot of unfortunate things happening in the league and I guess in general. I guess shout out to Bengals media for actually asking Jackson Carman about the report. We talked about it last week about why that wasn't the case. And yeah, good for them for actually addressing it now. But yeah, nothing really else to add. Not yeah.
Yeah. And you know, the response there, in case people missed it, I think we talked about it on the Happen in Headline show, or another show that they had asked the question. I think the response was kind of a no comment. So you know, that is what it is. But yes, and to piggyback off that, they're doing an outstanding job, all of the Bengals beat writers, podcasters, etc., bringing us all kinds of different content, sights, sounds from OTAs and whatnot. And they are, you know, we're privileged not only to have quite a few of those people come on our show in the past and give us all kinds of cool info, but we as fans and those who also cover the team are privileged to, you know, in some ways work alongside some of these folks, and in other ways, you know, kind of be able to soak in all the great content they give us. So, you know, they always do a bang up job, whether it's, you know, from the Inquirer, the Athletic, the official site, ESPN. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So, you know, I will piggyback off that and say for sure that we're pretty lucky to have some great beat writers and coverage men and women of who cover the Bengals.
You are a world-class diplomat.
Am I?
100%.
Okay. I'll take that as a compliment.
No, it is. Like, because I diplomacy is not one of my strong suits. And that's why I feel like this partnership has worked for the last four years.
It's a good one, my friend. It's a good one. We'll be back with more stuff. Hopefully you enjoyed the interview we had with Justin from Engraven Vids. Go subscribe to his YouTube channel. And of course, if you are new to our show, or if for some reason you've been watching us and finally you decided to like us and you want to subscribe and be notified when we go live, you got to like the Cincy Jungle Facebook page. You got to go hit the Orange and Black Insider icon at the bottom of this YouTube page here, this video. Click that to subscribe and click the bell to be notified when we go live. And then, of course, if you're listening to the audio side of things, get it on your favorite streamer, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, any of them. We're there. Leave us a rating and subscribe to the Cincy Jungle Podcast channel, where our show, the Orange and Black Insider, is, as well as Matt Minnick's Coach Speak / Chalk Talk. But we'll be bringing you all kinds of stuff throughout the summer as the preseason and training camp roll on. John, have a good rest of your week, man. I know you've been a busy guy. Hopefully things settle for you, and you have a good rest of your week.
Hey, you too, and happy early Father's Day to you, man.
Oh, wow, what a nice guy. Thank you. Yeah, it is.
It's all the dads out there listening, for sure.
Yeah, yes, 100%. Thank you, John. Appreciate that. Take care, everybody. We'll see you soon.